The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Doug Glanville, we are working on getting him in. Oh, there he is. He's calling in right now, so that's good. Doug Glanville wrote an article, a great article. And Doug Glanville is being consistent here because Doug Glanville, during the Astros scandal, talked about the steroid situation and how much worse that was in Major League Baseball than what the Astros did, because hundreds of players, quite possibly, maybe, I don't know, maybe even more, lost their jobs because guys who were cheating took their spots. And Doug Glanville was one of those guys who didn't cheat, and because of the guys who were cheating, was forced out of baseball probably earlier than he had to be. So he's joining us right now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 to talk about his article on ESPN, which is a great article. Doug, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on. Welcome, Houston. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you being here. Let's start with the article, and I don't know that you... Okay, first of all, I'd like to know this. Big Poppy was named in the Mitchell Report. How come you didn't name him in your article?
Yeah, and you know, people have definitely asked that, and you know, what I've tried to do is just reflect an experience that I directly had in the time period of which I played. And you know, and I tried to sort of frame it. But if I had time to, you know, explore you know, generational histories way back in, you know, even before I played and continued on, there's a lot more compelling just conversations you could have over individual players and case by case basis. But my main focus was saying, okay, this is the era I played and these are the guys I competed against. And I know that, you know, many of the voters took that into account. That's what they're tasked to do, right? To try to figure out and contextualize the eras of David Ortiz and the eras before that, and try to come up with a synergy. And I think we've proven it's like that's extremely difficult because you have changing rules, changing laws, changing priorities, and which is why like each era had its own burden. So I tried to just at least capture what I knew the best, and that is, you know, my time frame, what I played.
Your thought is that we, okay, not getting the guys in there that did steroids, that we know did steroids, that we shouldn't just be calculators. They broke all the records. It's unbelievable what they've done in baseball and everything else, but we have to have standards. Now, you do call for them, for the steroid era to be represented at the Hall of Fame, just not immortalized, correct?
Right. I mean, you know, this is history, and the Hall of Fame is a museum. It also obviously has this power to enshrine, not the hall itself, but the voters and that they rely on. And so I tried to draw a line in the sand in terms of the difference between, you know, recognizing achievement or just not even achievement, but just recognizing the consequences of someone's, you know, record-breaking abilities and talents and production or whatever it may be. And recognizing that we're honoring how this person went about it and the whole, you know, sort of the task of saying, okay, we're enshrining this person. You know, there's a distinction between being great and being consequential. And the fact that you can tell baseball's history through steroids, and that's important to acknowledge and recognize it and recognize the records and the implications of that. But I think it's now reflecting on, well, do we have to actually, you know, put a plaque up for this person or whatever? You know, do you need to, you know, treat this as something higher, because that is what the Hall of Fame induction sort of sets up, right? You're trying to bring in the best of all time and couch it in like these numbers by which they are judged are authentic. And that's where we ran into a lot of problems, clearly, in the steroid era, because we started to lose very quickly the sight of what do these numbers even mean if how we're acquiring them is not in due honest performance and fair competition.
Doug, do you see the steroid era as not disappearing, but do you think it will be diminished as new generations of baseball fans who are maybe a little more open to anything and everything, which society is much more open now than it was, let's say, 20, 30 years ago, for sure. Do you think that in 10 to 20 years that it will not even be looked at the same way that you and John and myself, we all look at it?
Probably. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what aging does, right? I'm 51, and each generation is entitled to that. They're entitled to review and consider their future, their conditions of today. You have a generation facing a pandemic. You have a generation that went through 9/11. They see things differently, and they have that right. And they may look at this differently. I know that a lot of the more recently appointed voters were more sympathetic to the steroid, you know, connected players, and I think that speaks to sometimes a generational thing. So, you know, it may change, and there may be something that allows, you know, maybe other players that are coming through that played in that era, they may have a different standard as time goes on. So I guess the short answer is yes, it probably will evolve. But it's also possible to go the other way, where a generation might say, no, we're absolutely closing this off for these players, and they may make that decision. But, you know, I just try to focus in on the period of time where I was so intimately engaged in it, and just share that experience of not just me, but a lot of other players that were looking on, trying to compete on what was a playing field that was not level.
Doug Glanville, former major league player, most notably with the Philadelphia Phillies. That's how I remember you, Doug, as a player and a good center fielder. Unfortunately, pushed out because of guys who were coming up and were using steroids. You say voters will move in and out and continue to reframe the priorities of the time. That's what you were just talking about there. Right. They could even decide that idolization should end and we just focus on history. Here's some history, Houston's history. You also quote Tom Murray here, and he says this, yeah. For when you undermine the meaning of fair competition, you celebrate something that has nothing to do with competition or excellence in sport. Jose Altuve seems to be the face, for whatever reason, even though it's been proven and talked about, it's been on paper that he was one of the guys that benefited least from the Astros cheating scandal. Mm-hmm. And yet he's probably going to be punished the most, because there's a good possibility that the voters, when they look at Jose Altuve in the future, are going to look at him much like they look at the steroid guys now, no?
Yeah, I don't envy those voters, you know, when the Astros players, and they obviously have a lot of great players that are probably going to reach the point of being in consideration. I don't envy that. And it's difficult, because that is what happens, and that's the frustration of playing in the steroid era, is that you get swept into a lot of things, you know, rightfully or not, because you're just, you know, sort of a guilt by association. And if you're, I'm trying to imagine being on a team that's like going down this road of having this sort of scheme going, and then not, how do you like not be involved? Like, okay, or maybe the guy knew the signs and they got to second base, but then you're driving him in. And, you know, I mean, so I'm not sure, because of the culture of, you know, you're trying to look out for your team and these are your teammates.
Okay, sure.
You're still trying to, you know, work through that, but then how do you actually separate yourself? So that's the big challenge. And the voters will have that same challenge of saying, well, we're going to parse it this way. And I just think the task for the voters just gets harder and harder and harder, because there's so much slivers of other evidence, because we have so much information, social media. Well, I heard this and this guy said that, and you're trying to get at the actual core of information that lets you make an informed decision. And it's harder than ever to get at that.
Let me ask you a question. I've asked this question. Jose Altuve allegedly didn't like it, didn't want them to be banging trash cans, and he was a leader in that clubhouse. I ask, why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you stop it, Jose Altuve, because you knew it was wrong? How come? Why didn't major league players, Mike Fiers finally blew the whistle, why didn't major league players, when steroids was going on, say, we can't put up with this anymore?
Well, some players did talk about it. They were drowned out or not really heard. I mean, even when Jose Canseco and Ken Caminiti, you know, sort of spoke about the numbers, I mean, that's sort of when things started to move. I think there's also a time where you're not sure. There's a difference between, like, oh, I suspect this and I can sense this, right? My expertise tells me this, and, like, the evidence in a court of law, and trying to actually parse that out while you're actually playing. Now, a lot of stuff was going on behind the scenes. And, you know, I was on the Major League Baseball Players Association you know, having meetings and trying to sort out, like, how do we actually approach this? And you know, when the thing really hit the fan in terms of the public domain, it was a lot more to understand and making sure, do we even understand, like, what is an advantage and what isn't, what's legal? Just to get through that took time. And there's no doubt that more should have been done or more, and I'm looking in the mirror on this, the Players Association, trying to figure out what is the way to approach it. You know, the big thing conversation then was, why are you testing people without cause? That was sort of a big thing that was brought up. And the questions around privacy and confidentiality, which is really clear in what we're talking about now, like the privacy confidentiality aspects of this, the 2003 survey test that we took to establish more than 5% of the players were using, and therefore we need a new policy or a stronger policy. All that we were sorting at the same time and trying to figure out, what exactly is the extent of the problem, and not just rush to like anecdotes and things like that. So it was slow and behind, and players exploited that, took advantage of that, and then before you looked up, it was fairly quick that. You know, we were facing records falling and different things that made us look at it differently, because now you question, now history was at stake. And that was something that, like you said, you talk about purists, people who love the game became even more concerned.
I was just going to say, that was also kind of a no snitch era too, where, we used to have Daryl Hamilton, God rest his soul, in studio, and we loved D-Ham. Yeah. And, he would say things like, why do you guys always, you never talk about pitchers? And we're like, pitchers? No. See, steroids makes you look like Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds. Pitchers would never use steroids. There's no advantage. He's like, okay, that sounds good. But I found it interesting the entire time that Major League Baseball, we can talk about the 5% and the survey, but the fact was, there are plenty of major league players who knew steroids were going on, a ton, and they just chose not to speak about it, because, Doug, I would assume, in a way, there was a little bit of peer pressure, I think, or maybe was it just a no snitch attitude? Well, you know what? I'm not going to be the one to try to bust this thing open, because I don't feel like being castigated from the entire sport.
That's a fair point, and there's no doubt, and I'd say that culture still exists in a large degree, because that's a typical clubhouse. That's your team, and once again, you step out there, you need to be sure. That's another thing, and you're not, just because someone came in 20 pounds heavier and looks like a weightlifter, you're like, is that really, what does that mean exactly? Or you look at the numbers and say, oh, this guy hit 58 home runs. So you're still kind of living in anecdotes, and you're like, also trying to do a job, and these are part of your job is like playing on a team. So it's very fraught waters to figure out, how do you actually go out there and like call people out? Yeah, we had a lot of conversations in the Players Association in our private meeting when we actually tried to sort through policy and, have much more honest dialogue about it. But to go in, into the public domain without a whole lot of the evidence you need and blasting your teammates, it's really tough. I think what changed a little bit was, I'd say the sign stealing was a time where you saw players kind of calling out other players, and that was really unusual. In fact, it really never happened in that way. So I would notice that as someone playing in a different era, like, wow, that's usually kind of keep it in-house and talk through it and then like come out. But people were just so openly upset that I think that changed the cultural expectation about, so as you mentioned, the code of silence.
So, Doug Glanville here with us on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Not that you're now all of a sudden a Hall of Fame expert, but since you did write, and it's a wonderful article, you got to go to ESPN.com and read it. What about Pete Rose? You think Pete should be in the Hall of Fame?
No, Rose, and that's something I haven't even updated my information on. I will say this, gambling and trying to compare all these things reminds me of going to spring training every year. They used to have the security officer give a presentation, and I call it the seven deadly sins. He'd go in and present about, if you do this, this is how people trap you. And he went through all of them, and gambling was certainly one of them. And, one of the things I try to look at is when you're undermining, as you just read, like the integrity of the game and creating doubt for audiences, fans, players, everything to say, this isn't authentic. This game is thrown. These numbers aren't real. I think all those create an existential crisis for the sport. And that's why you have to look at that seriously. And I think gambling certainly falls in this category of like, wait a minute, these games aren't real. Like guys are throwing games, you know, whatever, Black Sox and all these things. And it's clear that it matters how players respond, how they actually address the issue. I went to spring training with the Yankees in 05. And Jason Giambi was my locker mate next door. So you know his, if you don't know his story, definitely look it up. But the thing that was amazing about Giambi is every day the media came to him and said, hey, you know, what about the steroids thing? And he apologized. He was very open and discussed it. And I think it made actually a difference of like how people perceived him. And but then when people just deny and say this and that, and then even though it's like a mountain of evidence against you, even if it's not a positive test or whatever, exactly, there's so much other evidence out there now. And I thought Major League Baseball, you know, we could have, you know, criticism about like all these things or like who was involved, all that. But one thing I thought was an important step is they said, okay, it's not just a positive test anymore. We're going to actually be able to investigate. And so you get these other cases that came up, whether Ryan Braun or, and so, yeah, look, people, these athletes are smart. They know how to protect themselves and mask things and all that. And I just never, didn't want to put all of this on any one player, Rose or whoever, because this was cultural. I mean, this was cultural, and it's not unusual in a hyper-competitive environment that you have culture of people willing to do whatever. That's just pretty standard. It's then what you do with that, and these players are going to be ahead of it. They're just going to do. And the players in that period when I played, they were ahead of it, and they got away with it, and they kind of, and you know, maybe people even got into the hall. All these things, right? But you know, your job, you know, if you care about, okay, the hall and all these things, you're trying to profess that fair play and standard. You got to do the best you can to try to mitigate it. And you know, whether Rose you mentioned or any of these things, you're trying to, like, be a good steward of the game so that it doesn't become who has the best pharmacist or who has, you know, who's paid off the most, because that's when you don't have a game anymore.
Yep. Doug Glanville right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Great article. Go look it up on ESPN.com. Doug, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Great stuff, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
There's Doug Glanville right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, we're behind. 713-780-3776. You're more than welcome to get in here. I want to talk right now about Champion Energy. If you're looking for a great way to just get your electricity to your house. I mean, it's not like, okay, my electricity is a Mercedes and yours is a Volkswagen. I don't know. You know, I don't know which one you like more. I don't care. Here's the deal. It's all the same. It's the same. Why are you paying more than I am for your electricity? I don't know why. Because it's the same. When I hit my switch, my lights turn on. Do your lights turn on? Yes. But why are you paying more for it? I don't get it. You're paying more because your electricity company is greedier than mine is. Mine says, I'm not going to just fee you to death like yours does. There are fees, obviously, but if you're looking for the best way to get that electricity, I feel like I've saved thousands and tens of thousands of dollars over the years with Champion. You can too. Champion.energy/1560. Champion.energy/1560.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. A short segment here. We went a little long with Doug Glanville. Good stuff. Really good stuff by Doug Glanville. It's a really good article. So if you're into baseball, they've got another article, Lance. That names the top 100 players in baseball history, including Negro League. So, you know, I think then which is fair that everybody should include not just major league players but the best baseball players in history. One guy who is off the list that it does not please Tim Kirkjian one bit, did not make the top 100, is our own Jeff Bagwell.
Are you going to play it sound?
No, do you want
to?
Okay,
yeah, here's I prefer to
here's
do it, yeah.
Tim Kirkjian talking about Jeff Bagwell not making it.
In the history of baseball, there are certain players who are able to transcend statistical anomalies. And one such player is Jeff Bagwell. After having a career that spanned a great deal of time in the city of Houston before then retirement, we found that Jeff Bagwell's 1994 season, one that Bill James himself considers to be one of the greatest seasons in the history of baseball, for a season like that and a career such as Jeff Bagwell's that resulted in a Hall of Fame appearance, for him not to make a list of the top 100 players, regardless of steroid era, is a travesty.
Thank you, Tim. Tim Kirchin, he was on with the Wheelhouse yesterday. Okay. Talking about this. So,
but also, I feel like Jeff Bagwell should be in the top 100. I mean, sorry, Craig Biggio.
Oh, well, I don't know if Craig Biggio is or not. He's not in the.
Who should be in the top 100? Bagwell or Biggio? If you had to have one, you're only allowed to have
Bagwell.
One. Ooh, I'm
here's the argument for Bagwell. Bagwell finished with an OPS of 948, which is in the top 20 all time. Higher than that of others, David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez. Bagwell is one of 13 players ever with an OPS that high, with at least 1,500 runs scored and 1,500 driven in. He was an excellent defensive first baseman and, hold it, a great base runner.
There it is.
He had two 30-30 seasons. To some, Bagwell is one of the five greatest first basemen in baseball history. If he is, then he should be in the top 100 players. So that's so funny. Okay, because I'm going to make this. Okay, so his
OPS. You're
going
to go to Lance Berkman.
I'm going
to
Lance Berkman again.
Yeah, I knew it.
I mean, it is unbelievable.
One of the great OPS travesties we've ever seen is Lance Berkman. His ability hit from the left and right side in a park that was not always conducive to hitting from the right side when you had a swing such as his was one of the real statistical anomalies in baseball.
Well, okay, so.
Lance Berkman, before his transgender bathroom comments, was clearly on path to be on the Hall of Fame ballot for at least a couple of tries. But everyone called him Fat Elvis and made fun of him, and he really wasn't really that fat. He just had a fat face like Matt Stafford.
And thank you, Tim Kirchin. He had a 943 OPS, which is higher than those other Ortiz and higher than A-Rod.
I'm not doing the Jeff Passan voice. Don't ask for it.
He only scored 1,146 runs, though, and had 1,234 RBIs. He played 15 seasons in Major League Baseball. So maybe that's why 1,100 and 1,200, that's what's holding him back. Well, not a 1,500 guy.
Biggio could still be on this list because we've only got
51 through 100.
Yeah, 51 through 100. So,
oh, you think he could be in the top 50?
Yeah, they're releasing 50 through 26 on Wednesday and 25 through 1 on Thursday.
I don't feel like Biggio is going to be in the top 50.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either, but you never know.
Biggio was a Gold Glove winner at second, a Gold Glove winner at catcher, and a Gold Glove winner in center field.
Thank you.
His defensive record speaks for itself. He's an amazing defensive player. He was an incredible base runner who never wanted to stretch a double into to a triple for fear of being thrown out because he was a smart base runner. And he was good at getting on base by any means necessary.
His career OPS is 796.
Do you think there's anyone right now who going, wait a minute, he wasn't a Gold Glover in center field? No, he was barely functional, actually.
He was,
He was like the guy, like when you're playing video games and you're going to put somebody in, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put Max Sharping in a quarterback on Madden. That's what it was like moving Craig Biggio to center field when that stupid Tals Hill was there. And they had to try to like, hey, listen, we'd like for you to go. Craig, we know you're a catcher first that we rolled into second base and you've done a nice job there. We know you're a little bit limited from a range standpoint. We'd like to put you in one of the most expansive center fields and also throw just a random hill on top of it at deep center that you have to traverse. How does that sound? Does that sound like something you'd be interested in? Absolutely. I know I don't have a big arm and I don't have a lot of range, but I'd love to play center field and run up a hill to make plays. What could possibly go wrong?
So he.
God, we had some dumb Astros
managers. Yeah, we did. So five times he was a Silver Slugger winner, which is the best hitter at his position.
Who are we talking about now?
Finished fourth in MVP voting, fifth in MVP voting. He was an all-star 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Bish was a really good player, but his 796 OPS ain't going to get there. He scored a bunch of runs, led the league in doubles 3 times, stolen bases once, hit by pitches 5 times. Is he the all-time guy in hit by pitches? I know Ron Hunt was huge. I forget.
Got to be up there pretty high.
I think Bish is, yeah.
Beer Man Greg says Biggio was just a stat padder. See, I thought it was the opposite. I thought Bags had some stat padding where, you know, he'd go off on games that were 9-1 in the seventh inning and stuff like
Biggio
that.
Biggio is 2 on the hit-by-pitch all-time list.
Oh, Huey Jennings.
Yeah.
Also a Hall of Famer.
Biggio's 285.
Huey Jennings, 1897.
287. He needed 2 more. He needed 3 more to set the record, 2 more to tie.
Okay, Huey Jennings. I don't know who that is, but I'm going to guess he played in 1897 for the Red Stockings.
Yeah, I would think so.
And Huey Jennings also had less than
the Knickerbockers
half of the plate appearances that Biggio had. He had 56-48.
Pitchers hated Huey Jennings.
12,500.
They just threw. I mean, Huey Jennings stood on the plate.
Huey Jennings was either the biggest a-hole or that guy was hanging right over the plate to the opposite side of the plate. Like, I'm telling you right now, Huey, if you don't back off the plate, you're going to catch a high and tight one. I'll make sure and buzz that fade right off the side of your head. Clip you right in your cauliflower ears. See how you like doing your combining then when you're out in the wheat farms sometime this fall. Say, Huey, it's time you back up off that plate.
Oh, you get one right in the noggin, see?
You're going to catch one right in the kisser. That's what's going to happen to you, Huey.
It's the bee's knees.
And say, folks, all the kids today are talking about old Huey Jennings, looking to become the league leader once again for the 10th year in a row in hit-by-pitches. Old Huey's got a very distinct batting style, choosing to crouch completely with his face over home plates, daring pitchers to hit him right in the face.
For the Cincinnati Hilltoppers.
The Hilltoppers once again lead the league in on-base percentage from this particular position in the lineup. But old Huey frequently has to leave the ballpark to go get to go have nurses take a look at fractured jaws. He's played with 3 or 4 fractures in his face on several occasions, but frequently has to leave the game before the ninth inning, choosing to have a defensive replacement and a ghost runner come in for him at first base.
And after the games, he sells Edsels at the local car dealership.
Say, kids, who wants to be Huey Jennings when you grow up? I don't want to become Huey. He always gets hit by pitches. Yeah, you can't have a sweet broad on your side if your face is always cracked up. Say, I want to be Huey. All the sweet broads will be coming to me, even if my face does get cracked up. It couldn't hurt. Look at me. That's right, Tommy. Don't be too hard on yourself. You've just got a big fat mug. Because that's what they used to call faces, mugs.
Kisser.
Say, Tommy. Old Huey. Huey took one right there, smack dab in the lips. His leather helmet just got knocked into the dirt again.
Oh,
that
my
one
goodness.
Looks like it was painful. Huey's on the ground and he's not moving. Well, but it's his third hit by pitch today, and he's really helping the Hilltoppers to finally get some runners on base here during the dead ball era. This is the only way you can get on base with Babe Ruth hitting all these home runs.
You can see the trail of blood from first to second.
Well, if you look closely, the trail of blood shows you the success that old Huey Jennings has had today at getting on base. There was the Trail of Tears, which is a disgraceful time in our era, but there's also a lesser-known trail. It's called the Trail of Blood.
Not to the Georgia.
It's the blood spilled.
Not to the Georgia Peach. It wasn't a terrible time. He loved it. He loved the Trail of Tears.
Georgia Peach. You know, there's nothing finer than when Huey Jennings and old Ty Cobb are able to just mix it up a little bit there.
Behind the stands.
Sometime behind the stands, those two will get into a bit of fisticuffs. Huey always comes out on the wrong side of that one, but he's used to it. He's an old pug with a flattened mug, that one.
All right.
That's enough.
That's
enough.
That's enough.
That's it.
When we come
tired
back.
Of that.
When we come back.
Tired of Huey Jennings stealing all of Craig Biggio's thunder.
When we come back, let's talk about the Texans coaches. Nah. Screw that. Nah.
You know who I'd like? A guy who's never coached before.
Yeah.
A gentleman by the name of Huey Jennings, I think, would be perfect for the Houston Texans.
He's got as much experience as Josh McCown.
Say, let's wait one. Who's got more experience coaching? It's equal. Who's been hit more by flying objects? Huey Jennings. That should be the difference. And he's good at prayer.
Breaking right here. ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
I want to swing it back. I told you about Union Kitchen and all the great brunch items they have. I want to swing back to Jack's Kitchen. They're owned by the same group. So Jack's Grill is a Houston original since 1993. It's a family-friendly restaurant. A lot of families go in after they're in the Bel Air location. I know a lot of families that go in after Little League baseball or after, you know, basketball practices, football. It could be after swim events. It might just be for birthday parties. But it's a great spot because they've got the different types of food you're going to love. Real burgers, 100% beef, never frozen, half pounds of meat on a wood-burning mesquite grill. They've got wings, queso, quesadilla, all of your favorite dishes. They've got plenty of television so you can watch the games. They've got the Jack's Ritas, so you're having your margaritas there. You're enjoying yourself with some beer. There's a lot of great food for you to enjoy. And they've got staff members who have been working there for 25-plus years. So it truly is a neighborhood spot. And yet there are several different versions for you to take a look at. There's two in Houston, one in Katy. So make sure you stop by a Jack's Grill. Enjoy their great wings. It's Sebastian, my son, Snacks. His favorite in the entire city is at Jack's Wings. That's where he goes for his birthday. Jack's Wings, Dad. Okay, you got it, Snacks. How much? Can I get 18? I'm like, Snacks, that's too much considering that you're going to get fries too. But that's what he likes to do. He's a hungry one, that boy. Go to jacksgrillhouston.com. That's jaxgrillhouston.com.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Oh, my gosh. Huey Jennings, you see, Wikipedia is gold.
You see the picture of him?
Yes, it's exactly what I thought.
Somebody looked up Huey Jennings. He's got a sweater on, one of those hats that's too small, the brim that's too small. He's jumping. He's got wool pants on, you know, the wool up to, down to the knees and the stirrups. That's Huey Jennings back in the
look
day.
Look at this.
Bro.
Huey Jennings, this is what it says.
Look at his teeth. I think he's got,
no.
He might have fake teeth, the wooden teeth in there because he got hit so much.
You know 100% wood teeth.
You know what's crazy? Today is the anniversary of his death. He died February 1st.
Oh, man. No Shout way. Out Huey.
Yep. Huey.
Shout out Huey.
There's just not enough people
ago.
Named Huey anymore.
Nah, it's dead.
Yeah. It's like Adolf.
Nobody Here's what
names
it says.
Their kids Adolf
anymore. Yeah, well, you know, that one took a tumble there in the 40s. Jennings was a fiery, hard-nosed player who was not afraid to be hit by a pitch to get on base. In 1896, he was hit by a pitch 51 times, a major league record that has never been broken. Jennings also holds a career record for being hit by a pitch with 287, with Biggio holding the modern-day record. It said he was manager, or he played for the Brooklyn Super Bos, and it also said he was known for his colorful. He was a manager for the Tigers, known for his colorful antics, hoots, whistles, and famous shouts of "Yeah!" from the third base coaching box. He suffered a nervous breakdown in 25 that forced him to leave Major League Baseball. Listen to this. So he is in the Hall of Fame, by the way, posthumously. Listen to this. This "Yeah!" thing. Jennings was manager of the Detroit Tigers. This is what it says. During his years as Detroit's manager, Jennings became famous for his antics, mostly in the third base coaching box, which variously included shouts of "Yeah!" and other whoops, whistles, horns, gyrations, jigs, and grass plucking. The "Yeah!" whoop became his trademark and was accompanied by waving of both his arms over his head and sharp raising of his right knee. They got a picture of it too. 1907, he was suspended for taunting opponents with a tin whistle. If you don't cut it out there, there's going to be problems. See? The Ea shouts continued and became such a trademark that Jennings became known as Huey Ea Jennings. And Detroit fans would shout Ea when Jennings appeared on the field. I wish I could go back in time just to watch his shenanigans.
Why aren't you reading like it in Turkchen's voice?
I know. No, Ryan Antics was a great coaching mind. Connie Mack once called Jennings one of the three greatest managers in history, along with John McGraw and Joe McCarthy. One of his greatest challenges and accomplishments during his years in Detroit was to manage the unmanageable Ty Cobb.
See?
Jennings recognized Cobb's talent and his complicated psychological makeup, concluded the best strategy would let Cobb be Cobb.
Yeah,
imagine that.
A racist pig. Let Cobb be Cobb. Hey.
Yeah.
Tom Brady tweeted this. I've always believed the sport of football is an all-in proposition. If 100% competitive commitment isn't there, you won't succeed, and success is what I love so much about our game. There's a physical, mental, and emotional challenge every single day that has allowed me to maximize my highest potential, and I have tried my very best these past 22 years. There are no shortcuts to success on the field or in life. This is difficult for me to write, but here it goes. I am not going to make that competitive commitment anymore. I have loved my NFL career, and now it is time to focus my time and energy on other things that require my attention. Done.
Yeah. Not a surprise.
No.
He was, I mean, if you couldn't catch those hints he was given before, because there's nothing left for him to do. The only thing left for him to do is spend time with his wife and kids. Like, that's something he probably doesn't spend a whole lot. We know he famously loves his children. And he just wants to be – he just wants to, you know, to see him and be part of their lives. That's why I told you this on Monday. I was a little disgusted by comments that came out over When did I tell you this? When did we start talking about it? Was it just yesterday? Yeah, it was just yesterday. The guy over the weekend who said, I just don't – why would you retire? You can still play. This just doesn't make any sense. Tom should keep playing. Why would you retire? Because you don't want to be Ben Roethlisberger. That's why. You don't want to be Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning got out a year too late. Now, famously, he won a Super Bowl almost despite himself. But Peyton had literally nothing left. Philip Rivers had – that's all he had left. Ben Roethlisberger's got less than nothing left. Tom Brady goes out as a guy who's going to finish in the top three in MVP voting. What's wrong with that? Especially when he's considered the greatest of all time in the sport of football. Nothing. So, he's a guy I've never hated, John. I've never hated Tom Brady because my respect for not only his process, but just how deadly he was. Like, I can't respect killers. I mean, I can't dislike killers. I have to respect them. I can fear them, that my team's going to get busted up by one of them. But guys who are just have this, that mindset where they are super poised, super clutch, I can never hate those kind of guys. I could never hate Steph Curry. I can't hate Tom Brady. Michael Jordan. Guys who I know are just mega clutch and fearless and just have that crazy killer instinct. There's never I can't dislike those kind of guys. I can fear them, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I was never a Kobe fan because he was such a Michael mimic. But I respected him. I didn't like him, but I respected him. No, I don't dislike the great ones. LeBron a little bit.
I think you need to be. I don't like fraudulent stuff. And no. I think LeBron is one of the all time greats in basketball without question. I think some of his off the court stuff is you know, could be considered a little fraudulent at times.
Mm-hmm.
That bothers me. It doesn't change how I feel about him as a basketball player. I don't think he has the same makeup as Jordan. So, you know, I'm Team Jordan, and that's not going to change, and I get it. Generationally, it's going to be different. But my thing with Kobe is people have really – Kobe's passing really changed people's narratives on Kobe. Kobe was considered not a great teammate, a guy who was tough to get along with. Tom Brady's always been considered a good teammate. Michael wasn't a great teammate. So I do think that one of the things that stands out about Tom Brady is, you know, they always say you have to have a little bit of the a-hole gene to be an all-time great, or most of the all-time greats have a-hole gene. I don't know that Tom Brady really had that. I mean, I do think that you demand excellence, and sometimes you may be viewed as prickly, but I never heard anyone say a negative thing about Tom Brady as a teammate. Never, ever, ever. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to go down as a guy that some people behind the scenes won't like. I don't think that's going to be the case with Tom Brady.
No, I don't think so.
I think
so
he's going to be that rare, likable, all-time great.
Well, just the respect and the work ethic and the – because he was, you know, first in, last out. He worked the hardest, so – and when that guy, he walked up everybody when they first joined the team. Hi, I'm Tom Brady. Hey, yeah, we know. Thanks. Thanks, Tom, for identifying yourself. But that's just how he was. And everybody thinks he was a great teammate. Just we watched the GOAT. We were lucky. We got to see the GOAT. There's no question. All right, 713-780-3776. Maybe you hate Brady. You can get in. Whatever you want to talk about here on ESPN 97.5, you're more than welcome to do that. I want to talk about Chastain Ford. I was with Patrick last night. As a matter of fact, we had a little meeting last night, and it's so, I'm telling you, I just love those people over there. What they do for you. You go to other dealerships, and you thought, well, this is a good price, and then it's, wait a minute, they've just added on $3,000. Chastain puts the best price up front without the hassle. ChastainFord.com. You are going to get the best price that you could possibly get. You get to customize it exactly how you want it. You build and price your new Ford. Don't worry about any markups or any dealer add-ons. They're not doing it. Don't get fooled by other dealers. Go to ChastainFord.com. Chat with a Ford truck expert. As soon as you get on, they're going to say, and you're going to have somebody to talk to, and they're going to say, okay, first thing, where do your payments need to be? We're going to do that. We're going to get you there and get you in the Ford car or truck that you want, that you need, that you have to have. And oh, by the way, they'll throw in a Yeti cooler. This is what they're doing at Chastain Ford. ChastainFord.com. Get to them. I love going to the dealership and seeing the people. You should too. All you got to do is get to 610 Homestead, not Hempstead, 5 minutes from downtown. The nicest people, the best deals on Fords, Chastain Ford.
This is Nolan Ryan, and you're listening to The Bench with John and Lance on ESPN 97.5. One of them owes me $20, but I'll let you guess which one.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Holy crap. So I just read the first page of his Instagram.
Tom Brady's. Yeah.
He goes on and on and on and does not mention the Patriots. It's all Bucks.
He played 2 years with the Bucks.
And it's all Bucks. Wow. Not one mention of the Patriots.
That's got to sting for Patriots fans. That's like Olajuwon saying, you know, my time in Toronto was very special. And I'll never forget my friends and family I've made here in Toronto.
The only mention is Jason Licht, L-I-C-H-T, Licht or Licht, whatever it was.
Light. Jason Licht.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a lineman for him, right? But.
No, he's the GM.
Oh, that's the GM. Yeah. Oh, that's right. There was a, who was Todd?
No, Matt Light.
Matt Light.
Was a New England Patriot.
Oh,
tackle.
Jason, yeah. There's not one Patriot mention. Holy crap. You think he's a little bitter?
Golly. Maybe he didn't retire the other day because he hadn't finished his post. And it was in draft still. He's like, no, I'm not retiring yet. Hold on. I got to finish this. It's going to take a long time. You know what? Maybe it got so long, he's just like, you know what? I got to cut the Patriot section out.
Maybe Ted long. Johnson was a little off about that conversation he and Bill Belichick had after they played in week 5.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't give a rat's ass of what Bill Belichick had to say anymore. Wow.
Could be.
I mean, this thing is six pages, 7 pages long, or 8 pages long. And he does
that
not.
Long?
Yeah. And he does not mention the Patriots. 1, 2. I mean, it's unbelievable. 8 pages long, and he does not one mention of the Patriots. Holy crap. That's pretty telling. And he's got a picture of himself on the front cover in a Bucks uniform. I mean, he must not. I mean, how much does Belichick wear on you? You know? If Tom Brady doesn't even mention you in his retirement after 20 years together, and he must have just been worn out. I felt unappreciated and had to get out, had to just get out of there. And he must have had some fun with Bruce, huh?
I think he did. I think he enjoyed being under, you know, out from under the heavy hands of Bill Belichick and the Patriot way. It's got to be draining after almost 20 years to be in that same gloomy, you know, you're how long? Tom is already a self-starter and self-motivator. I don't think he needs Bill Belichick's, you know, style of football. I think it served him well, but at the end, I think Tom just wanted to see what life was like, see if the grass was greener on the other side at the very end of his career. And it is kind of sad to see, that I mean, he's a Patriot. He's a Patriot who had two good years with Tampa Bay, but he's going to be known for his time with the Patriots. And it is weird how 18 years, whatever it was, with the Patriots gets wiped out by 2 years with the Bucks. That shows that I wonder if he has beef at all with Kraft, with Belichick. You really do wonder about that. I recognize him showing love to – and listen, there's going to be a Hall of Fame induction speech in about 5 years. We'll see what Tom says then.
He's got to.
Yeah, it'll change. It'll be a lot different. It'll be, and maybe he feels bad that the retirement leaked and he didn't tell Tampa first. And he wants to make, you know, and this is almost kind of a mea culpa.
Well.
Because Adam Schefter wasn't going to get that wrong. Adam Schefter had it right.
Yep. Yeah, no question. 855 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Tom Brady officially gone. Did you see this? Younger head coach is 9-3 in the playoffs. Arians won his wild card game against Philly. He was older. Reed won the wild card in division. Otherwise, the younger coach, does that tell you something about what the Texans maybe should do?
Well, what, copycat?
No, get a young
go
coach.
Go find somebody off the Shanahan tree, because that's what we're talking about.
No, what about Kevin O'Connell or Jonathan Gannon? Get a young coach.
Well,
look at Zach Taylor's in the Super Bowl, along with a guy that was hired as a 30-year-old. Look at Shanahan was hired as a young guy.
You don't hire a young guy. You hire the right guy. Well, if the young guy is the right guy, but to be the right guy, you've got to have certain, like, you have to have a certain element inside you. And there's been a lot of young coaches. Josh McDaniels, most famously, flamed out as a young coach badly.
Yeah. Well, because he was a Belichick disciple that thought you walk in there and you bully the room, like much like Flores did. And you know what you find out? Oh, no. You got to be a people person. Look at the guys that are left, the way that they treat their players, the way that they hug their players, the way that they, you know, can relate to their players. Listen, Brian Flores. And look at all of the offensive guys that are succeeding right now. And you know what? Brian Flores had an unbelievably difficult time finding an offensive coordinator. He was going to go on his, what, third in 4 years there if he didn't get fired? So I'm not sure, or fourth, whatever it was. I'm not sure that one of these young guys, you know, what's the matter with Kevin O'Connell?
Yeah, but let's take a look. What do you know about Kevin O'Connell? This is what I know. Kyle Shanahan came under was a Mike Shanahan disciple because that was his dad. He's been doing it he was born into it. I mean,
and
he's
was
just got
plays.
An incredible he's got an incredible mind. He assembled a staff that was a very good staff. Matt LaFleur and I think they and McVay really learned under Mike Shanahan. Let's not forget, we act like it's Kyle Shanahan's tree. You know, it's Mike Shanahan too. You know, those guys were all in Washington when Mike Shanahan was the head coach there. So I think they all learned the Mike Shanahan way, which is a particular way, a certain style of offense, a certain way of play calling. I think they all benefited from that. Now, O'Connell is a play caller for McVay, so maybe some of that rubbed off. But I think you also have three personalities that are very, very alpha-based personalities and confident personalities. I don't think it's as easy as I'm a certain age, so I'm going to be a head coach. And I'm not, I know you're not trying to say that, but I'm just saying that I don't really think it's necessarily age as far as you've got to find the right guy who has the right demeanor and personality. Zach Taylor had a really good personality. Zach Taylor has had a bunch of losses is what he has. And he has 1 year as a winner, and he had two great draft picks in a row, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. But I think he has the right demeanor. Like, Zach Taylor has the demeanor you would want for the Texans, because it ain't going to be easy. And he had to take over a Bengals job that wasn't going to be easy, and the Texans job's not going to be easy. And I'll say this, from what I know about Josh McCown and what I've seen over the years, I think he has a good demeanor. Like, I think he has the right kind of demeanor. The guy's never coached. He's never coached. I can't get that out of my head. You're going to have the best staff with him, which means Lovie Smith will stick around. It means Pep Hamilton very likely will stick around. You've got to have a really good staff around a guy who's never coached.
Yeah.
And the Texans officially on their website, did you see this? They've got their own, on their own website, HoustonTexans.com. It says the head coaching tracker. And
yeah,
it's got Flores, Lombardi, Ward, Gannon, O'Connell, and McCown. Now, the guys who've been brought in, Hines Ward did not get a second interview that I know of, and I don't believe Joe Lombardi did either. So I don't know if they're really – I don't know if they're long-term. You know, I don't know if they're being seriously considered. I know one guy I talked to down here in Mobile thinks the Texans are going to hire Flores. He thinks Flores will be the – will be the guy. I don't think it's Flores. I think it's going to be Josh.
Yeah, I hope not. All right, now 859 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 713-780-3776 to get in here and hang with us right now here on the show. You are more than welcome to do that. Tom Brady has retired, and we got all kinds of other stuff that we have to get to here. So don't you go anywhere. Right now, I'm talking about Doc Linville. I heard him a little bit earlier. We did a recorded spot to Doc. Is so laid back, so cool. He's a really cool dude. His office is awesome. His staff is a bunch of beautiful people. Well, he's a plastic surgeon. So, I mean, dude has got it's what he does all day long. He not only does the hair thing, he does the women's body parts and all of that stuff. He makes people look beautiful all day long. And he said, you know what? I'm going to help guys out too. It's mostly just women, and they want their lips or their Botox or their or their breasts or their whatever they want done, augmentation that they want done. Yeah, the doc does all of that, but he said, you know what, I got to take care of the guys too. Let's make sure that we do the best process that we possibly can to put hair on their head. And he does that every single time. The results are ridiculous, so good. I did it, and I can't be happier. I asked my wife, do you think I need to get some more? She's like, no. It's great. It is perfect what the doc did for you. So, I just love it. I can't tell you. You get so much more confidence. You feel so much better. Get you some hair. If you don't have hair, get you some hair at 975hair.com, 975hair.com.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.